Welcome to the show. Thank you for listening to Blue Hardwood, the place to be to talk Dallas Mavericks. If you enjoy the podcast, please remember to rate and review the show. We appreciate the extra mile you're going to leave an Apple Podcast review. And now, without further ado, here are two people who are stuffed from Thanksgiving, but they are gluttons when it comes to talking about the Dallas Mavericks, Lauren Gunn and Brian Zillow.
Thank you, Billy, for the wonderful introduction. Really appreciate that. Today, we are looking at the five biggest questions going into training camp for your Dallas Mavericks. The Mavericks actually open training camp this coming Tuesday, believe it or not. That would actually be on, check the calendar here, December the 2nd, because the season starts in like 3 weeks, which is insane. The Mavericks already have their preseason schedule already set up as well. Before we actually talk about the five biggest questions going to the training camp for the Mavericks, we have to check in on Lauren and see how she's doing.
I'm doing good. With the preseason schedule coming out, even though it's only three games, that kind of really set everything in motion. I mean, we've got a game in what? How many days? You said the 12th.
12.
Like 14 days. 2 weeks or no?
Yeah.
14 or 13.
Something like that.
Something like that. Anyway, quick math on the fly. There you go. Yeah. So having those games, having two of them being against Milwaukee, I think everybody has said something about that in one form or another, and I think we're all kind of joking about the same page there, Brian. I know you just love me bringing that up, but I'm really excited knowing that we've got games coming up. Even if they are preseason games, we might get to see some experimental lineups. It'll be our first look seeing James Johnson, Josh Richardson, our rookies that we just drafted, and then the recent signing in Wes Iwundu and bringing back Willie Cauley-Stein. So I'm excited to see everything that we're going to get to see in those preseason games, even though they maybe don't exactly count for anything. I'm really, really excited to kind of get a first look at this team.
Gotta love all that Giannis chatter that's going to just be within the December timeline, because he has until what, December 22nd or something like that to sign the extension?
Yeah, I want to say that sounds about right.
December 21st. That is the deadline to sign the Supermax. So that'll be out there. So fantastic. So looking forward to that. Interesting kind of questions, like, for the Mavericks going into the training camp, because it still feels like the season just ended and we're just diving right back in. I want to start with, I don't know if this is the most obvious question. You know, year two of Luka just destroyed my expectations. Did not even fathom or imagine he would just make the incredible jump that he did from year one to two. Is there going to be a huge jump from two to three? Do you see a huge jump in his numbers in year three?
You know, it's crazy that we're asking that question, only because the dude almost averaged a 30-point triple double, and it was only his second year, and so obviously he's going to get better. I don't want to say that I'm going to expect a huge jump in numbers, because even though he may get better, how much more can you put up in terms of numbers? For me, the biggest thing that I'm going to be looking at is 3-point percentage and free throw percentage, and where's the improvement there? I think as far as people wondering, oh, did he get better at shooting? Is he a more reliable 3-point shooter? He shoots a lot of threes. So I'm not, as far as the percentage, I'm not going to let that determine whether or not I think Luka is a good shooter. And I don't think anyone is sitting here saying, or within the Mavs community, says that Luka is a bad shooter. But let's see. Yeah, last year shot 9 threes a game at 31.5%. So obviously you want that percentage to go up a little bit, but he's taking so many threes each game. It's like, okay, you kind of got to take that percentage with a grain of salt. Taking that many threes a game shows you that a guy like that can hit the three ball. So again, I'm really just going to be looking at the shooting numbers as far as points, assists, rebounds, what's going to happen there. I'm not really expecting too huge of an increase. If he finishes the season north of 30 points, I think he could easily do that if he shoots the ball from the free throw line a little bit better. And he shot 76% from the free throw line on 9 attempts per game last season. So if he can continue to get to the free throw line and convert a few more of those free throw attempts, I think he could very easily finish north of that 30 points per game threshold margin, however you want to put it. So I'll be very interested to see what he comes out of the gate look, or how he comes out looking as a shooter right out of the gates. But yeah, I think when it comes to Luka, especially surrounding him with what people might describe as a stronger team when in comparison to last year, I think some of those numbers are just going to naturally go up a little bit more. And obviously he's continuing to grow as a player, add more things to his bag. So yeah, I'm really excited with what we're going to see from Luka. I think he's going to, I'm not looking for him to take another huge step because like I said, how much higher can you get? But I am looking for him to kind of continue to solidify himself as a superstar, top five player in the league, and continue to put league on notice with who he is as a player and as a teammate and just what he can do with the overall success of this team.
So you're proposing you'd be completely okay if his numbers were similar as far as like scoring, rebounding, assists. It's just having that opportunity to clean up like the little things, the right. Foul shooting, the three-point percentage. With his three-point shot in general, I wanted to actually just go back and look at what he kind of did from year one to year two. And Luka obviously is a tremendous fan of the step back three. Now, let's actually just look at these numbers here. So the step back three, so he actually attempted 166 step back threes in his rookie year. He actually made his percentage was actually 36.1%. Not bad. Not bad at all. From year two, we're looking at that right now. I'm sorry. I thought I had that right in front of my face. Step back, jump shot. Let's see here. He attempted 270 step back threes and his percent was 33.7. So that's a, you know, about 100 more attempts, it seems like, for sure. You know, and everybody's always going to look in reference back to the game-winning three he made against the Clippers. For all intents and purposes, was not a step back. It's just a three that he just drained. So that's a little bit different. And I think he just falls in love with that a little bit too much. I would be more of a fan of just a straight-on three. I'm completely okay with that. Because with a step back, yeah, you're definitely giving yourself that more spacing. But then you look at his pull-up jump shot from three. It's not that much of a difference. So he was a 30.8 just from a pull-up jump shot from three. So it's not that big of a difference. If it was like maybe like 36 to 29 or something like that, then I could say, maybe. But yeah, area of opportunity to maybe kind of clean up on just not necessarily understanding the difference between shooting the step back and the pull-up, but just being smarter and on your shot selection when you are doing that.
Yeah, I think this group that we've got going into the season is going to continue to open up more opportunities for each other. Obviously, talking about Josh Richardson, kind of a 3-and-D type wing, and also having Tim Hardaway Jr. Losing Seth Curry really sucked, but we'll dive into this a little bit more later in terms of the starting five. But if you're running a group that has, you've got Luka handling the ball and you've got Josh Richardson and Tim Hardaway Jr. kind of, as your wings, I think you've got lots of good shooting targets. And I don't know, I expect his assist numbers to go up a little bit more. I think he's going to continue to improve. And I don't know, I think he's got a lot of really good targets on this team. Even someone like James Johnson coming off your bench, the dude can score. So I don't know, I really am so optimistic and excited for this team. I think guys like Maxey will get towards the end of the season and in the playoffs. Maxey didn't shoot too well from three, but anyone that's been watching this team for a while now knows that Maxey is a very, very good catch and shoot three-point target for Luka. So and same goes for Dorian Finney-Smith. Those corner threes, he's perfect for those. And so I've got a lot of faith in how the offense is going to run and how the ball is going to be distributed. I think Luka's going to continue to find himself open. And if he does go for the step back three, I mean, I have trust in his decision making. I feel like there were times I can recall a couple of times throughout the season where I'd be watching and be like, was that the best move? Did we really need to go for the step back there? But at the same time, when I'm watching Luka, I have also learned that you can't, or at least for me, you can't doubt him, because I remember his rookie season, some of the shots that he would take, I would be like, whoa, you're a rookie. And then he would just go in. And then that was kind of when I was like, holy average rookie. And so it was just, I don't know, I've kind of learned to just trust. And sometimes, I mean, every player is going to take bad shots. And so hopefully as he continues to grow and as he continues to age and mature, he will become more, even more aware than he already is and what a good shot is. And when I say that, I don't believe that he takes a lot of bad shots, but just being the guy with the ball in your hands all the time, you look at someone like LeBron, someone who doesn't make a whole lot of mistakes. And so as time goes on, I think that will become more of the expectation when it comes to Luka. So I don't have any concern with his decision making in the long term. And I think I'm gonna go ahead and say that we are going to be the top offense in the league yet again. I'm gonna say it because I believe it. So we'll just have to see.
A member of the offense last season for the Mavs, Dwight Powell. We still haven't really seen any projection or timetable that has been presented for Dwight. I believe we're getting pretty close to a year or so on his injury that actually took place against the Clippers. The only thing right now that we have to go on, Lauren, obviously, Kelly Kaplan made out a comment through social media on October the 8th as far as just Dwight and how his recovery is going. And Dwight Powell said he has no limitations in his Achilles and rehab right now. If he could play pickup at the facility, he would. Rehab is going well. Dwight said, I've been saying everything on schedule, but it's kind of a moot point. We don't really know when we're going to get going again. Yeah. I don't want to say discouraging, but that's kind of what it is. We've seen so many Achilles injuries pop up in the past few years. It really sucks. I mean, obviously it happened with KD, which is awful. Now, of course, Klay Thompson, the most recent. When it happened with Dwight, we all kind of said, God, man, that sucks, because we finally found the right spot, right situation, right way to use this guy. Now we don't have him anymore. And of course, we saw what an Achilles injury did to a guy like Wes Matthews, who was just going crazy before he got his injury. And with Dwight, I want to say his ability is so much different from all those other guys, because those are a lot more, I guess, how can I say this, slashers, three-point shooters, and things like that. And that's not Dwight's game. But now Dwight does need that ability to kind of rim run and to the basket and cause chaos. You know, Dwight is so good and an important cog in this offense. Steve Kerr went out of his way to commend, you know, what Dwight Powell means to this offense for the Mavericks. So we've always had realistic expectations, I feel like, Lauren, on Dwight coming back. I know there's been conversations about, hey, maybe the Mavericks should look to move him into another situation if they really had admirations of landing like a really big time guy. I don't really know when he's going to come back. I will say right now, realistically, maybe we could see him about March and April, but I have no idea. I'm not a doctor.
Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and try to pretend to be a doctor either. But in regards to Dwight Powell, I'm very excited that the training camps are about to start, because I think we're going to get a lot of answers there. When I kind of did some research on this whole, what is he expected to be ready for the start? Because I've been talking to people in locker room and on Twitter, and some people are like, yeah, that's old news. He's going to be ready to go. And I personally hadn't seen anything for sure that he was going to be ready to go. So I was like, where? I must be missing this. So let me do some research. CBS Sports says that on their website, it says that the expectation is that hopefully he will be ready to go by the start of the season. And then Dallas Sports Fanatic also put out an article saying, I think in response to a Dallas Morning News article that came out, that says Powell will be ready to go for the season opener. And so it's hard for me to wrap my mind around that, because for all the reasons you just said, it's such a significant injury, and I personally don't know. So this week I'm really going to be looking for some answers in training camp, because this whole injury, I feel like if it was a for sure thing, everyone would know, and there would be lots of information out there and quotes about him being ready to go. And when I had to do a little bit of digging to really try and to find any mention of him being ready to go. So I don't want to say that I'm fully convinced one way or the other. I think I'm just still a little bit confused on that whole situation. And I think based on my, I guess, perception of and all the events that have taken place, I would just say, look at training camp. Let's see what's being said in any like I don't know, media sessions or any questions that are answered, anything that gets put out there. And that's really kind of when we'll get an idea of Powell's progress, what the expectation is. Is he ready to go? If he's ready to go, will he be playing limited minutes? I'm sure that that would be the case. Oh, and just how is he looking? Is he looking as explosive? Are they kind of playing him with caution and limiting his movements? Like, what is that going to look like? And so, yeah, again, I think training camps, when those all pick up, I think that's when we'll get a lot of our answers.
Yeah, that's a great callback, Lauren. I didn't even think about the idea of, let's say, Kawhi might be ready for, let's say, end of January, February type of situation. The Mavericks and Casey Smith, Carlisle and Donnie are going to treat him with such TLC, mm-hmm. and it's probably going to be one of those things where first session, you know, he's on a 10-minute restriction. And if everything goes well within that first week, then maybe we're gradually bumping up to 15 and 20. And then I imagine he's not playing back-to-backs either. If I had to just take a wild guess, I imagine he's not playing back-to-back games. So it's going to be a very slow process, I imagine. And I would just tamper any expectations that you might have with Dwight. I will just say, if you're going into the season and we get very solid production with Dwight, that's just additional house money. For right now, until we actually have more answers, like you said, Lauren, let's just go in and just let's see what happens with Dwight, because for all intents and purposes, we're probably not going to get the same Dwight back right away. Maybe one day we get him back, but to expect that explosiveness and efficient offense he was providing right after, you know, right away off the gate is just it's unrealistic. So we'll just see what happens. So another of the Mavericks big men that we have to really, I guess, I'm not worried about, but based on the feedback that we received yesterday, people are concerned about the Kristaps situation. So I'm not sure if you saw the interview through Instagram, where I think it was just through the Mavs Instagram page, where he was kind of addressing like the surgery, injury, recovery time frame, and everything like that. So I know based on all reports, the Mavericks are targeting January 1st for Kristaps' return. I'm really okay if we want to just take maybe 2 to 3 weeks just to, you know, make sure he's 110%, make sure everything's feeling good. I'm completely okay with that. I'm not really sure where your stance is. This team has shown they are versatile, that you can win games without your big guys. I mean, Mavs beat Milwaukee at Milwaukee without Luka. The Mavericks beat Indiana without Luka with KP going off, and vice versa. So the Mavericks can win games if like one of their stars is not available, especially with the additional guys that they've added. In theory, they are deeper, and of course they still need to have that camp and a few games to actually blend in and gel and everything like that. But this team is fully capable of winning without a big star.
You know, with KP, it's, and this might be the easy answer here, but I believe that whatever they decide to do with him, and whatever, everybody's going to be on board. Casey Smith, the staff, coach, Cuban, Don, Kristaps, they're all going to be on board with whatever the decision is. They're not going to rush into anything. They're going to be very conservative with his return. So if they target January 1st, 9 days after the season kicks off, and as that date kind of closes in, they're like, you know what? We might not, that might be a little soon. We're not quite seeing exactly what we want to be seeing in practice or away from the games, whatever, and we might push that back a little bit, then I think that's going to be fine. I mean, we saw, I think at the beginning of last season, I want to say, if I'm remembering correctly, the season started off with a back-to-back, and he sat the first game so he could play the second one. And I think that really shows you, that right there just shows you how Carlisle, the front office, how they really don't care, you know, if the fans are like, oh, God, we got to see it. We want to see this new duo. Like, going back to last season, oh, we want to see this new duo. They're prioritizing his health and his care, and they're saying, you know what, we're not going to play him on back-to-back games. And there was just kind of this expectation that they're not going to overwork him. And that was coming off of the last injury. So now that he's had another one, obviously not as significant as the last one, but still a major, major injury. Well, okay, not major, major. I don't want to scare people, but it was still an injury that was no small thing. So I think they're going to be really, really careful with this and continue to put him in a position to where he can move forward and come back and still be the Porzingis that we all know. and just still be really careful with that entire situation in general. So if he comes back January 1st, I'm not going to be looking at it as, oh, they rushed. They wanted to get him back. They want this to be a super competitive season. That's not how I will look at it. I will look at it as more of a, okay, they believe that he's ready to go. They've seen enough to feel confident in him going out there and playing however many minutes a game. And if he comes out and he plays a limited number of minutes, well, then so be it. But I don't know. I've seen the way Barea came back from his major injury, and I just, even Wesley Matthews, when he had a significant injury, Achilles injury, I know it's not quite the same thing, but these are all significant injuries where there are questions when that player comes back of, will they look like how they did before the injury? And so I don't have that question when it comes to Porzingis with the meniscus injury. I want them to be careful and conservative. And if he comes out on January, what was it? January 2nd, January 1st, January 1st, mm-hmm. I mean, then I will assume that everything is good to go. Everyone's on board and everyone's feeling good about where he's at health-wise, physically in general, and everything will be good to go.
Yeah, and he did play 57 games last year, and I believe the over-under was around 60-ish, give or take. And, of course, this was with the stoppage in consideration as well, so I don't know what his on-track games played would have been around that time, but I think he would have obviously shattered the 60-game expectation. And I feel like me and you are always – been on the same page on this. We don't need Kristaps to play the full 72 game stretch. We need this guy to play 60 games, and if he needs that extra day off in those back-to-back games, perfect, no problem, because we need Kristaps healthy, ready to go for the playoffs. Because if it comes down to a situation where, you know, the Mavs maybe lose a game or two because Kristaps doesn't play, who cares? Like, you know, the Western Conference is so tough at this point. Unless, you know, you're maybe like a 1-8 or 2-7, I don't really think seeding matters. Like, when you're outside of that range, you know what I mean? So does it really matter if Dallas is 3, 4, 5, or 6? I don't really think so. So let's just get KP like 60 games. If he needs that 50, if it's 57, so be it. I think they'll be completely fine. And yeah, I'm with you. The strategy with KP is not to appeal the Mavs markdom or stands, if you will. It's the stability of the franchise moving forward. So I feel in good hands based on everybody in charge. So no worries there. The starting five for the Mavericks. I don't know. I've gone back and forth, but I have a general idea, but I'm interested to see who, as of right now, going ideally on paper right now, who is your starting five?
So my starting five is, and I guess if Dwight Powell is available, I think Dwight Powell gets the starting five spot. If not, I'm going to say this with the assumption that he's not going to be available at the start of the season. And if that's the case, my projected starting lineup is Luka, Josh Richardson, Tim Hardaway Jr., Dorian Finney-Smith, and Maxey. That's my projected starting lineup.
Okay. That's what I have on my notes as well. I will say, I don't think that's set in stone. I feel like if Carlisle does play with his new toys that he has at his disposal, with Richardson, James Johnson, Terry, Green, Willie Cauley-Stein added back on there and available. I'm really curious to see what he's willing to do and consider as a curveball. Until KP's ready, I mean, obviously you got to put KP in the starting lineup at some point, but I don't know, man. I've got a gut feeling we might see a lot of James Johnson starting at center at some point, even if KP's back, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think James Johnson, that's tough. I could see, like, I mean, if Courtney Lee can start, James Johnson can start. I'm sorry, I don't mean that to be like disrespectful, but I do think, I mean, he's got experience, he can score. Personally, if he does start, I see him starting more so at the 4 than the 5.
Okay.
That's just me though. And also, like, another thing that I want to throw out, I've seen people mention a Willie Cauley-Stein start. Is that something that could be, if say Dwight Powell and Porzingis are both unavailable for the start of the season, do you roll out Maxey at the 5 or do you roll out Willie? And I don't, if I had to guess, I would say Maxey Maxey, but if they're looking for more size with Willie Cauley-Stein, he's a bit taller. And if they start going in training camp and him and Luka are running a pick and roll and he's catching Willie on some easy lobs, and he's giving him easy looks around the rim, that might be a route that they decide to go. But again, if I had to guess, they really like what the Maxey-Luka connection, the pick and roll can be there with Maxey and Luka. Pick and pop can be there. He's the most similar to Porzingis, in my opinion. He's just not quite as big. So if they decide to go a different route there, then maybe that's where you see Willie Cauley-Stein. Yeah, if you're looking for some more offense because you feel like the perimeter defense being brought by Josh Richardson and even Tim Hardaway Jr., because he's not a bad defender either, then maybe you want to kind of bring in some offense, and maybe that's where you throw in James Johnson if you want to throw in, bring some more offense, bring some more experience, and kind of put Dorian Finney-Smith coming off the bench as another defensive wing. I don't know if they go that route. I lean towards no. But again, if you're running these, and that's why I'm so excited for the preseason, if they're running these experimental lineups and Luka is getting James Johnson wide open looks and he's just lighting people up because people are either forgetting about him or prioritizing stopping Luka, whatever, I don't know. I think there are a lot of different scenarios that we could see. So I remember kind of going back to the Courtney Lee thing, there would be starting lineups that would come out and I would see Courtney Lee in the starting lineups. And God, I never saw that coming. Like, I did not. So as much as I can sit here and try to predict based off of what I would do and what I think in terms of balancing both offense and defense, I mean, that's my projected starting lineup, but who knows? Maybe you do see James Johnson in there. Maybe you do see Willie Cauley-Stein in there. So I don't know.
Can I present the argument Willie Cauley-Stein might try to get a little bit too KP happy? When I say that is, obviously there's been workout videos of him shooting threes and what have you. I don't know if I need him and Maxey in the same lineup doing kind of like the same thing. You know what? Does that make sense?
Yeah, like, no, I hear you.
At least James Johnson, I feel like, would bring a different element than Maxey. Because obviously if Maxey's in there, you know, he's going to be busting his ass, playing defense, being available in the three, in the corner for Luka to find and things like that. But I don't necessarily need Willie Cauley-Stein to, you know, be shooting pull-ups, you know, in transition either. Because I know he's trying to work on his game. That's great. You know, I don't know if I really need that from him. I need him to be that diver, be that bruiser in the middle, that guy that can get rebounds and block out. James Johnson, I feel like he's a little bit different. And he's not afraid to get in there and get dirty and get the rebounds and block out. And he can handle the ball a little bit better. I feel like James Johnson is going to know his role a little bit better. And Carlisle is seeing something he doesn't like. He's going to be like, nope. He's not going to be waiting around that to just bottom out. That's like my only concern with putting Willie Cauley-Stein with Maxey in the lineup.
In my opinion, if Dwight and Porzingis are both unavailable, I think Willie would take Maxey's spot as the starting five, because if you start both of them, your bigs coming off the bench include Boban, like James Johnson, if you want to throw him into the 4-5 group, but I kind of see him as, I don't know, small ball four more so. I would prefer somebody else having the backup big spot. So you're very limited there if you start both of them, which is why without either Porzingis or Powell, I don't see that happening. But I think the concern that Cauley-Stein will be a little maybe trigger happy from three or even just jump shooting, I think those are valid concerns. But at the same time, I also think Carlisle will very quickly set the expectation of, okay, if you want to shoot two threes a game, or if you get an open look, you know what, go for it. Like, we're looking for you to expand your game, whatever, go for it. But if he's sitting out there and he's taking four threes a game and he's shooting 18% on threes and he's just not really converting, then he's going to very quickly lose some minutes and lose that starting spot. So, or just get pulled. So I'm not too concerned about that being something that you're seeing night in and night out. It might be a little frustrating in the beginning if it starts happening a little bit, but I'm not too concerned about that. And I think the way the offense will be run, I think it will kind of highlight and focus on him being that dive man, that rim rolling big. And you might look for the kickout threes to be targeted more towards Dorian Finney-Smith, Josh Richardson, Tim Hardaway Jr., maybe even Maxey. And I think the plays that are being run are going to limit Willie Cauley-Stein being a pick and pop type target, if you will.
Right on. You presented this as our final question going into training camp for the Mavericks, and I thought this was actually a very interesting question. With the season starting, I think rosters should have been expanded this season. Personally, that's my opinion. I think the roster capacity should have been set to maybe even 17 or 18, based on everything that we're seeing right now. And NFL is just being ravaged by coronavirus right now. You know, games are being postponed. You know, there's a report right now the Broncos may have to forfeit their game if they can't find a functional quarterback. Like, I don't know what's going on there. I just felt personally with everything going on, players should have, like, the roster should have been expanded a little bit. But I know then everybody's like, well, we can't have all these people together, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, that's a whole different conversation. I just felt like in this year specifically, there should have been an exception to add roster spots. Mavericks have a crap ton of people on the roster right now, and only 15 players can be on the roster and two are inactive. And I believe the two-way contracts do not count towards the active roster. Is that right?
That's right. Yep.
Okay. So we know for sure Tyler Bay, who was drafted, he's on a two-way contract. Do we know anybody else for sure that's a two-way?
I believe I lost the roster that I had pulled up. I believe it was Gillespie. Gillespie. Yeah, there you go.
Okay. The 6'9 forward out of Baylor. Okay.
It might have been Nate. What is it? Hinton? What's his last name? Hinton?
Oh, yes.
It might
be him.
Shoot, I don't know. Okay. I think it's him. I think the Gillespie is kind of like a different thing. So that was incorrect.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. So Nate Hinton out of Houston. So all of the recent players signed within the last few days between Brea, Trey Burke, Willie Cauley-Stein, who doesn't make this team? I find it very hard to believe JJ Brea doesn't make this team. Trey Burke, you know, he was just signed to a 3-year deal. He's making this team. Mm-hmm. There's no way Willie Cauley-Stein doesn't make this team, so I'm not really sure where the cuts come. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist just signed with the Knicks, so he's not on the roster anymore. So Mavs got a couple people. Where do they come?
From my understanding, out of what we've currently got going, considering the two-way guys, you only need to cut one person, I believe, is my understanding. And that is going to be between really just J.J. Brea and Wes Iwundu. Because, like you said, Trey Burke, 3-year deal. Willie Cauley-Stein, you really can't afford to cut him, because at that point, if you don't have Porzingis or Powell, your only backup true center is Boban. And we all know that you can't throw out Boban night in and night out. Some people might push for that, but personally, I don't think you can do it, and I don't think the Mavs will do it. So that leaves Barea and Wes Iwundu. Next year, Barea is making $2.5 million, and Wes Iwundu is on track to make $1.6 million. Iwundu signed a 2-year deal, but to me, it's not a question. I think it's going to be Wes Iwundu getting cut. And I mean, I know people are like, he's only 25. He signed a multiple year deal. He started he started 21 games last year for the Magic and averaged 6 points, just under 6 points, 1 assist and 2.5 rebounds in 18 minutes while shooting 34% on 1.5 threes a game. So I know he brings some defense. I know he adds to the wing department and he's young, but to me, there is no scenario in which you cut JJ Brea over him, because I think he's going to, I mean, we all know the impact Brea has on this team. We know how much Luka loves Brea. To me, it doesn't matter the age of Iwundu. And I know some people are very much like they want him around, and I get it. I would be excited to kind of see what he looks like in a different situation, but I just don't see that happening. And I had somebody bring up to me the Devin Harris situation, where all things must come to an end. But I don't believe, and I could be wrong here, but I don't believe we signed Devin Harris. I don't believe we signed him and then cut him. I just don't think we ever offered him another deal, because I think at that point we had a lot of young guards and we didn't really have room for him. So it was just kind of like a natural, you know, end. I don't see, I think Barea, I mean, he's getting up there in age, and some people were wondering if he was even going to be back this season to play at all, or if he was going to retire, become a coach, whatever. So I don't see a case in which you offer him a contract and then cut him. So I would be very, very surprised if they chose to cut Barea. I really, really don't see that happening. So yeah, I have to say that your two-way guys will stay and they will be on their two-way deals and not count towards the active roster. And the one guy you will cut, even if Barea doesn't play every game, whatever, I still think he gets that last spot.
The Devin Harris comparison, that's a good callback. I did not even think about that and put that in my head. I feel I've been trying to get and gather the pulse from Mavs Twitter. I feel like based on everything I've kind of absorbed, people are going to be really mad if Rhea makes this team over Wes. You know, look, I get it. You know, if Rhea makes it, he's up there in age. He's 36. And Wes is a guy they just signed, you know, pretty cheap contract, young, unproven, looking for a new opportunity. He's really excited to play with Luka potentially. I don't know what to tell you. I would like to think whatever happens in this last spot, Carlisle is going to just really have a tough conversation. Let's hope competition brings out the best in everybody. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whether it's Wes or JJ, they both bust their ass and whatever happens, happens. I would like to think if Wes outplays JJ in camp, Carlisle will make the tough decision and let JJ say, you know, hey, this is what it is. I'm sorry. You know, we're going to go Wes here. JJ at that point, he could either decide to go somewhere else, maybe take some time away, maybe be some type of player coach. I don't know. But I would like to think Carlisle is going to just base it on performance of this camp alone and just not on merit. And we all love JJ. JJ was so important for the title team. We get it. Like, I still love JJ for that. He did so much for that group. And I will always be thankful and appreciative of what he did. It's a time where you do have to move on. You don't want to have Dallas Cowboy syndrome where you're just hanging on to people because you got those warm and fuzzies from yesteryear. At some point, you do have to actually make an upgrade on the roster. So if the opportunity is there, I'm for that. I will just leave you with this and then feel free to chime in whatever you would like, Lauren. Mm-hmm. If JJ is added to the roster, tell me to who he's playing over. You've got Trey Burke re-signed. You've got Jalen coming back from injury. You want to give some minutes to Terry. You've got guards now in Richardson and Hardaway that you're going to be playing a little bit more with Luka. I don't really see a lot of minute for Brea. Wes, on the other hand, you know, God forbid if something happens with Tim or Josh or Dorian, something happens to Dorian at all and he's out for a significant amount of time, that's not good because we're pretty thin on the wings right now.
I mean, that is a good point. Personally, this whole situation, I don't see Brea playing over Burke, even Tyrell Terry. That might sound crazy. Like, I don't see him really getting too many minutes. I just see him desire for him to be around the team because of the impact that he has on the locker room, being a vet and just being similar to the Udonis Haslam situation, just having someone around the team to inject them with energy and just kind of keep the mentality and just the morale of the team on point. And so, but you do bring up a really, really great point with Owundu. We added a lot of wings this offseason and that was great. Like we're good with wing. But if you do lose Tim Hardaway Jr., if you're looking at that three spot or that even that maybe that two spot, you did bring in Josh Green and you do have Dorian Finney-Smith, but Dorian Finney-Smith and James Johnson might be more of that 3-4 spot where Tim might be more of that 2-3 spot. So that might be where you're like, you know what, if that situation presents itself, we would need someone like Owundu to kind of step in and take on more minutes. So from that standpoint, I would completely understand cutting Barea and signing Owundu. If there's a timeline in which you keep Owundu, you cut Barea, and then turn around and hire him as some sort of development coach, if that option is on the table, well then shoot, I don't know why you wouldn't do that, because you're kind of checking everything there and you get the best of both worlds. So if that's a possibility, then shoot, go that route. Because if you lose a wing, yeah, you are absolutely or you are kind of at that point, you're looking at Josh Green, a rookie, to take on more. James Johnson, is he going to maybe go play some of that three, or then what does that look like? So from that standpoint, then yeah, I do understand keeping Wes. But and then I actually want to go back to something that you mentioned a bit ago about expanding the roster. I don't know if it's too late for them to decide that teams can keep more than 15 active players, but I think that's a really, really important question. My brother and I had a conversation about it, and I mean, credit goes to him to bringing it up to me, because that was the first time I had even thought about it, was why are they not expanding the rosters, because this is such a unique season and time. So I don't know if it's too late, because the season, I mean, training camps are about to start, preseason's about to start, but I don't know. To me, that kind of seems like, well, like you said, that's a whole other conversation. There's a lot more that goes into that. But with the wing situation, if you do have an injury, then yeah, maybe that's why you keep a Owundu. But I also liked what you really said about training camps. If everyone goes into training camp, kind of clean slate type thing, everyone's playing for a spot, I think that is the best way to go about it. And if a one dude comes in and he's playing with our group of guys and it is completely different than how he played with Orlando's group, well then shoot, maybe he fits a lot better. Maybe he's playing well. Maybe he's shooting better. Maybe he's become a better shooter because he is only 25. And if that's the case and he earns that spot, well then he earns that spot and I'll eat my words and I'll be ecstatic to bring in another young wing and just continue to have a young group of guys that are going to continue to develop. But I still, where I'm at, if I had to put money on it, I would assume that it's Barea that gets that last spot. So we'll just have to see how it shakes out. But it, again, if it's a Wondu getting the spot, I'm certainly not going to be angry about it.
One final bonus question I want to throw at you real quick. Mm-hmm. What realistically are the expectations for all the rookies the Mavs drafted this year between Green, Terry, and Bay? Mm-hmm. Based on everything that the Mavericks have done, and added. They've added obviously a lot of wings, a lot more veterans on this team right now. And we know Carlisle's stance on generally playing young people who aren't legally eligible to purchase an alcohol beverage. He usually doesn't like them. Luka being the exception because he's, you know, a superstar. I don't really know my expectations for all three of those guys this year. Tyler Bay being a two-way guy, that's a nice guy to have as a backup. If something were to happen, if you have outbreaks or injuries to your wings, that's a guy that you could obviously bring up if you would like. But I don't really think I have like too many crazy expectations for Josh and Terrell this coming season. I really don't, because if they are getting tremendous production from either one of them, that's great. But I don't know. I could see really each of them maybe being like a 10, 12 minute player each. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. Anywhere as little as 10, maybe as high as 15 for maybe someone like Josh Green. But I think when we're bringing in Trey Burke, that to me was like, okay, you got Trey Burke, mm-hmm. you got Brunson, and you got Tyrell Terry all coming off the bench. Granted, Tyrell Terry's 6'3", and those other guys are like 6'1", 6'. Tyrell kind of fits more of that Seth Curry mold. And so I don't know if they would roll out a group of Brunson. I don't know if Tyrell Terry would get more minutes over Trey Burke. I don't think that that's quite it yet. And I think the only situation or the only reason that that could be on some nights is because he has more size and you might not want to play Trey Burke next to Jalen Brunson. But at the same time, we've seen Carlisle roll out 3-point guards before. So I think my expectation is I expect Josh Green to be a pretty consistent night in and night out rotation player because he does kind of have some size. He plays with a lot of effort and he'll bring defense. So I expect to see him night in and night out. Tyrell Terry, as much as, I mean, I've talked to you and I've talked on here about how much I like the Tyrell Terry pick and I can't wait to see what he does. I'm not sure if we're going to see him night in and night out and if it's going to be and how consistent that will be. Even if you do see him every single night, I'm not sure that he's going to be getting the same number of minutes because you brought back Trey Burke. You've got Jalen Brunson. You have Josh Green behind Josh Richardson and Tim Hardaway Jr. And if you start Maxey and Willie Cauley-Stein or Powell and Porzingis, well, then you still have, you know what I mean? And so it's just, there's a lot of kind of windows where maybe they try to go get those minutes, but I think you will see Terry get an opportunity to show what he can do. And maybe that's where he does end up earning some minutes over Trey Burke, because I think he's a better shooter than Trey Burke. And if he comes in and he shows that and Brunson is doing the facilitating off of the bench and you don't necessarily need that from Trey Burke, then maybe that's where Tyrell Terry kind of gets in there a little bit more. And then maybe you're rolling out kind of a bench group of Brunson, Terry, Josh Green, James Johnson, Willie Cauley-Stein. I know you don't run in five in, five out, but maybe those are your immediate relief guys for each position. I'm not sure. I don't know that. I think that you've got a ways before that could be the scenario. But what I'm trying to say is I think Josh Green will be consistent and you will see him. And I think Tyrell Terry has the potential and will get the opportunity to maybe surpass Trey Burke in his current role, but it's really up to him. I think he has that ceiling and I think he could do that in his rookie year, but we'll just have to see.
If you could think of a player Carlisle is going to give more of the Darth Vader stare to, who do you think he's going to yell at more this season, at Green or Terry?
That is so hard. I'm going to have to say, oh my God. I'm going to have to say Terry, which might be crazy, but
me too.
What I've heard about Josh Green is he plays with so much effort. and he's a 3-and-D guy. So if he's missing threes, that might suck, but that's kind of the expectation for a rookie. They're trying to get their confidence. They're trying to get their feet under them. But if he's out there playing with effort, giving everything he's got, playing strong defense, you can only be so mad. You know what I mean? So, but if Terry goes out there, who's more known for his offense and his shooting, and he's taken too many shots or bad shots, that might be where you start to see a little frustration from Carlisle. That's just my kind of immediate reaction / prediction for that.
Yeah, I could see that, especially if Terry's pulling up a three and it's a bad three. You see Carlisle just like looking at him with a stare. We'll have to keep track of that. But really, we'd like to thank everybody again for hanging out with us. We can't wait for the season to be underway. We're still trying to really work out the logistics as how often Lauren and I are going to be dropping episodes. I think right now, pending scheduling conflicts, I think we're looking at generally probably about 2 a week going into the season. You know, obviously, if time permits, if we can get something else going, we'd love to have additional content available. We do have some stuff in the works that we can't disclose yet. Just be on the lookout for some announcements, and hopefully in the next coming weeks that we look forward to sharing with everybody. But as always, we appreciate each and every one of you. Thank you so much for hanging out with us again. Our iPhone users, if you could provide that 5-star review at your earliest convenience, we'd really appreciate it. High five, fist bump, and take care.
I'm sick of this. This conversation is over. I'm done talking to you. Hit my music. I'm out of here.